Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's August 2nd, 2021, live to be rebroadcast August 4th, 2021 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. Yesterday was Jerry's birthday. Mm. Hey, Jerry. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. We're here on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. I got a question from Ken from radionaturopath@gmail.com. He asks, I'm hearing more places are requiring employees to be vaccinated. Mm. What do you suggest for those who are hesitant? Additionally, is there a detox or something that one can do if they have already received the vaccination? Thanks for asking the question, Ken. So as I've stated before, unfortunately, my position is that the main way out of this pandemic is the vaccine. Another way out of this pandemic is for people to wear masks anytime they are indoors in a congregate setting or even outdoors if it's hard to socially distance, such as at a concert or a big gathering. However, I see many people in my practice who are hesitant. There are a few pieces here. One, if your company is mandating vaccination, is it absolute? Will you be let go if you don't get vaccinated? Or do they have accommodations, such as allowing you to work off-site or allowing you to be present if you are masked and providing hand-washing stations? Private companies can mandate vaccination and fire you if you don't take them. They can also not hire you. It's possible that in the future this will be questioned legally, but they can let you go currently. So if you are hesitant and management is mandating vaccination, you may get let go, and a doctor's note won't help you unless your company's mandate is not absolute. There are businesses right now that are mandating vaccination even before hiring, and you have to present your CDC vaccination card. If you are hesitant and your company doesn't have an absolute policy, be respectful and wear a mask in the office and wash your hands frequently. It's a good idea for businesses to have good air purification, such as outdoor air exchangers or HEPA filters. I have a HEPA filter in my personal office where I see patients, and there's another in the waiting room. HEPA filters can remove viruses, including the one that causes COVID-19 from the air, but should not be relied upon 100%. They should be used along with physical distancing and mask wearing. They are an extra layer of security. So here's the thing. I had a thought about mandating vaccination. The thing is, vaccination makes you less likely to get sick and die from COVID-19. It makes you less likely to go into the hospital and less likely to get serious illness. It's not absolute. And the vaccine doesn't necessarily protect you from contracting COVID-19, from carrying COVID-19 viruses in your body. So in terms of mandating that everyone get vaccinated, you may or may, I'm not sure how helpful that is. It's probably helpful if everybody in a setting is vaccinated because everybody's less likely to get sick. But is everybody less likely to contract COVID or be carrying it? They may or may not be. I think if you're in a congregate setting and you're indoors, especially right now with cases rising, that you still have to wear masks. I'm in a healthcare setting. So healthcare setting, we're still mandated. So if you are going into a healthcare setting, if you're going to see the doctor, you're going to see the dentist, expect to wear a mask. We were never not mandated. We were never in a place where we let patients not be masked. Like we're mandated by the CDC and by the state of Connecticut. So if you go into a healthcare practitioner's office, expect to be masked. And if you don't, and I talked about this last week, please don't not do it because it's exhausting for us to have to enforce it. It's one more thing that we have to do. It's stressful enough to maintain, to manage a lot of patients, especially, you know, people are coming in, they're not feeling well, they're stressed. And if we also have to manage your issues around wearing a mask, that's one more stressful thing for everyone, for you and for us. If you just wear a mask, then it's one less thing for everybody to have to be concerned about. It's very stressful for us to have to look at you and say, listen, could you put a mask on? Because that interaction, it's like we're telling you to do something and we're telling you to do something that you don't want to do. And you're forcing us into the role of being a parent or telling you what to do, which is make instead of being your coach and your counselor and someone who's serving you, we're someone who has authority over you, and we don't want that. So if you would just put your mask on and don't worry about it, it makes it so much easier and so much less stressful. It's very stressful for me to have to take an authoritative stance over you. That's not my style. That's not the kind of medicine I practice. The kind of medicine I practice is such that I'm your coach, I'm your companion, I am a resource for you. I don't want to be an authority over you. And so I don't want to be telling, having to actually tell you to do something. So please wear your mask and don't force me to have to tell you or my staff, okay? Thanks. Does that make sense?
Makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, unfortunately, you know, in terms of whether COVID-19 will come into an office setting, it can come in even if people are vaccinated. So I don't know. Again, I don't know how much. I think it's probably more useful to mandate masks than it is to mandate vaccination, because you just never know if somebody's going to come in with COVID. The only thing is that if you have somebody who's vaccinated and somebody who's not vaccinated, and the person who's vaccinated is carrying COVID in their nose and they transmit it to somebody who's unvaccinated, the person who's unvaccinated has a much likelier case of getting a very serious illness. So I see the point. People want to be safe. That's what's going on. And companies don't want to be liable. I don't think they can be liable for COVID, but companies don't want to create an unsafe work environment. And this virus is bad. It is bad. You don't know how sick you're going to get with it. And it's a multi-system illness, and it can kill you, and it can kill people you love. It's really scary. I had a very sad thing happen. As some of you know, the positivity rate in Connecticut as of a couple days ago was 2.72, which is up from a few weeks ago when it was less than 1%. Positivity rate, may I remind you, means that of the people that get tested, 2.72% of the people in Connecticut who got tested were positive. That doesn't mean that 2.72% of the people in Connecticut have COVID. It probably does mean that a higher percentage of people in Connecticut than 2.72% have COVID, because this only accounts for the people who've actually been tested. There are probably people walking around with COVID who haven't been tested. So that's the positivity rate. So, you know, you have to add a few percentage points for the people who haven't been tested. So if you're looking at Florida, Florida right now is at 18%, which is scary. And there are places in Florida where they have a higher positivity rate than they had when the pandemic was in full swing, like in the winter last year. This is the highest spike that they have had in Florida. So because they opened up too soon and too many people are unvaccinated, and that's what's going on. And I was going to go visit my mother for 2.5 weeks, and my mother asked me to cancel my trip. So I'm not going to get to see my mother. I had seen my mother in June, and it was wonderful. And it wasn't long enough, so I planned a very long trip to spend time with her, and I'm not going. Because this pandemic is still going on, and it makes me very sad. So.
And it's not the first time you've had to cancel your trip.
I've had to cancel my trip. Well, I canceled a bunch of trips because I had travel scheduled
during
the worst part of the pandemic, not realizing that it was going to be the worst.
Worse now.
Right, and now
down
it's
there.
Worse.
Down there,
it's worse. That's right.
Down there in Texas and various other places.
The worst thing, another bad thing that's happening. Now, if I book one of the airlines, I have an airline that has a very liberal cancel and change policy. Our travel in January may not have as liberal a cancel and change policy. I don't know. So I have lost a bunch of money on rental cars, where I've gotten a really good deal on a rental car and there's no changing refund or anything. And I at least have to call the company and say, look, I'm not coming. And then they eat my money. And that's happened a couple of times. The upside of that is because I'm not going to Florida is I'm going to make the money back in less than a day because I'm going to be working on days I wouldn't have been working. So it's not so bad. I mean, it isn't just money, but it's an unfortunate thing. But I'm going to work and make it back. So, you know, this is really hard, this bit of the pandemic. And if we would all get together, the big thing is mask up and get vaccinated, because that's how we're going to get out of this pandemic. And as you've heard me say before, it's not just about the vaccination. It's because we were backed into a corner because natural medicine was not promoted throughout the country. And we didn't jump on this early enough. So it's spreading. And it's not something you want to spread because it can kill people. So the other thing that Ken asked was about detoxification after receiving the vaccination. So that's an interesting question. It begs the question, what are you trying to detox from? What are you trying to get detox out? So the mRNA in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccinations persist only for a number of days. And you don't want to detox those out because they're doing a job. You don't want those to leave. You want those in there telling your cells to make spike protein so you can make antibodies to them. So the lipid nanoparticles that escort for the Pfizer and the Moderna, the lipid nanoparticles that escort the mRNA into your cytoplasm, into your cells, they'll be gone. They'll probably be gone in a matter of weeks. Once you have the antibodies, you can't and don't want them to leave your body. And so the spike proteins that are created by all of the vaccines only persist in your body for about 2 weeks. And you don't want to do anything to escort them out, not that you necessarily could. The spike proteins need to be present in order for you to make antibodies to them. If you're not having excessive acute symptoms from the vaccine, I would not try to detox until you're fully vaccinated. That is 2 weeks after receiving your final dose. And that's especially for the Pfizer and the Moderna. There's some thought that, you know, if you, because the lipid nanoparticles are what are escorting those, the mRNA into your cells, even though they act as adjuvants, which means that they do irritate your immune system and cause you to make antibodies and rile your immune system up, you don't want them going anywhere while you're making antibodies. So it might not be a good idea to do a full-on detox in the 2 weeks after your last vaccination. Or, you know, in the 2 weeks after any vaccination, because you want the lipid nanoparticles to still be present to escort mRNA into your cells. But 2 weeks after, you know, what 2 weeks later, after you're done making your antibodies and you're considered fully vaccinated, you can, if you want to do some kind of detoxification, you could do that. And I think if you get rid of lipid nanoparticles that way, I don't think it's a big deal. You're already going to have the antibodies. You're not going to detox those out of your body. And the spike proteins are gone at that point. So the spike proteins need to be present in order for you to make antibodies. And if you have uncomfortable symptoms, you can discuss with your doctor the best things to take. I've been recommending acetaminophen over ibuprofen for headaches and body aches so as not to take any chances of suppressing the immune response. But once you have a full-blown immune response, it's likely that a little bit of ibuprofen isn't going to stop it. So the other thing that I do recommend in the time before and after taking the vaccine is hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Drink. Water. Okay. And you can also drink coconut water. You can make natural electrolyte drink with a quarter juice, three quarters water, and a pinch of Redmond salt from Utah or Himalayan salt. Or you can also get a natural electrolyte drink that's meant for athletics, not the kind you get from the supermarket or convenience store that's loaded with poor quality sugar. I think some of the symptoms come from dehydration as the kidneys and liver try to process excess inflammatory compounds from the immune response to the vaccine, and also relative dehydration because of the increased level of inflammatory compounds due to the vaccine. Those inflammatory compounds can give you that fever, headache, dizziness, and muscle and joint pain. For most people, these last 1 to 3 days, but I have had some unfortunate patients with pre-existing autoimmune disease have symptoms for a longer period of time, like a week or more. So it's not, these vaccines, you're not going to just get the vaccine, get a sore arm, and be done with it. Some people will. Some people will get no symptoms at all. Some people will just get a sore arm. Some people will get a sore arm and sick for a day like I did, where I was really sick. Like I had basically a migraine and was in bed all day. And then felt kind of out of it for another couple of days. And that was helped by the hydration. Some people will get this interesting, you know, dizziness and lightheadedness and sort of neurological symptoms like Ron had. And I think that was because he had inflammatory compounds in his body and he was getting a bit of neuroinflammation and he was a little dehydrated. So when we hydrated him, we gave him electrolyte drink. He got better. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
that's right.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's, if you get any of those symptoms, if you're not nauseous, get some electrolyte drink on board and that's going to help. I could drink, when I had the migraine, I was nauseous. So I could only drink a very little bit of water before the nausea kicked in and then I had to go back to sleep. And fortunately, that rough migraine lasted 12 hours, and I just slept through it as much as I could. And then, you know, 12 hours later, headache let up. I was hungry, and that was it. And then I just had to deal with feeling a little off and a little dehydrated, and that lasted a couple of days, and then I was all right. So if after 3 days you have no more mRNA, nor adenovirus if you've taken Johnson & Johnson, and you have no spike protein after 2 weeks, it's not clear to me how long the lipid nanoparticles from the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines persist. If you're very concerned about those, you can then certainly encourage basic detox through your liver and kidneys. Drink plenty of water. Eat lots of produce. Focus on liver-friendly foods like beets, carrots, lemons, and cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, and cabbage. You can also get sweaty exercise and, of course, hydrate during and after that. You can avoid inflammatory foods like sugar, excess alcohol, processed foods and chemicals, and any food intolerances. You can take supplements that encourage detox like milk thistle, amino acids like cysteine and methionine, artichoke, and turmeric. And make sure you're getting adequate rest. Stress does not help with the detox. What does stress help with? Pretty much nothing. I mean, that's not entirely true, because if you had a life of absolutely no stress where you never put any kind of stress in your body, that makes it so you're not exercising your body's stress mechanism. It's a good idea to exercise your stress mechanism a little bit, but it is a good idea to, get as much rest as possible. And if you're stressed all the time, that's not a good thing. Our bodies do have a fight or flight mechanism that's meant to be used. And if you never use it, it's like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, you're not accustomed to using it. And when you get exercise, when you do bouts of exercise, like high intensity interval training or any kind of short burst training, you're exercising your stress system, and that's a good thing to do. But the best thing to do is to stress yourself and then rest, and then stress yourself and then rest. Rest is at least as important as stressing, but never stressing yourself at all, that may not be so great either, depending on what else is going on. All right. So thanks for the great question, Ken. If you want to get a question answered on the air, you can simply type it while we're doing Facebook Live, or you can email it to radionaturopath@gmail.com, which I'll see at another time, and I'll answer it during the next show. And that's how Ken got his question answered. He wrote me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. All right. Now I want to talk about tea tree oil. I'm very excited about tea tree oil. Tea tree oil is a really great essential oil from Australia. So something really great happened. You know how when you go to your routine dental check, the hygienist will use a pick and go along your teeth and read out to an assistant 3 numbers per each side of the tooth. You know, they go 313, 323, 333, 434, 535, 787. Oh, that's not good. What they're doing, those numbers are they're measuring at 3 spots, the side, either side of the tooth and in the middle of the tooth in the gum. They're measuring how many millimeters the gum is pulled away from the tooth. So one, if they say 313, that means on one side it's 3 millimeters, in the middle it's 1 millimeter, and the other side it's 3 millimeters. And they do it in the front and they do it in the back. And that's an idea of how close to periodontal disease you are, how much gingivitis you have. So the higher the number, the more inflammation there is, the less healthy your gums are, and the more likely you are to have plaque that can cause decay. Plaque is biofilm, a protein that's made by oral bacteria or any bacteria to protect itself and remain inside its colony. Plaque is damaging to enamel and can ultimately cause decay. The less plaque, the less decay. When you have gum inflammation, known as gingivitis, your gums can become weaker and be less likely to hold your teeth in place. The healthier your gums are, the less plaque, the less decay, the longer you get to keep your teeth. Also, the more inflamed your gums are, the more friable they are. Friable means that they they can come apart more easily. And the more likely plaque and bacteria can enter your bloodstream and even cause cardiovascular disease. So did you know that if you have excess plaque and tartar, you can get cardiovascular disease from that? How does that even make sense? If you think about it, it's very simple. So if you have excess plaque, you have excess inflammation in your gums have a blood supply, And if they're friable, they can open up. When you have that bleeding in your gums, well, bacteria can get in. Bacteria goes through your system, and then it can get caught in your heart valves. It can also get caught in your coronary arteries. Body looks at it and says, bacteria, you're not supposed to be here. Mounts an inflammatory response. There's damage and irritation to the blood vessels or the heart valve because of that. And you can get inflammation. So your body's going to hit it with, it's going to try to clot it with platelets. It's going to send calcium in to wall it off and cholesterol to assist in walling it off. And now you have plaque, or now you have a calcification on your heart valve. So I think endocarditis, where you have an inflammation of the heart valve, that's very rare. Atherosclerosis is not rare. It's common. So one of the ways to prevent cardiovascular disease is to take care of your teeth, believe it or not. So anyway, when you have gum inflammation, you know, that, as I said, that can, you're more likely to get decay. So what happened to me is that my hygienist, Kim, did the usual count. This time there were no numbers above a 3, when 6 months ago I had some 4s and 5s, especially around my wisdom teeth. Kim and the dentist were thrilled. Kim ran to get a special sticker. It said 60s on it. It had a cartoon peace sign and what looked like Jimi Hendrix playing on the guitar on it. And usually when I get a sticker, I choose the sticker. But this time, Kim insisted on picking the sticker and getting it for me. So this was a very special time. Anyway, they wanted to know what I had done differently, and I had made 2 changes. I'd added a new mouthwash that contained a lot of peppermint, wild mint, and spearmint oil, as well as a lot of tea tree oil. It also contains zinc, myrrh. So myrrh, remember the 3 wise men who gave gifts to, right, to Jesus?
Right.
They came with frankincense, myrrh, and gold.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, really, the frankincense and the myrrh were worth more than the gold. I mean, gold is nice, it's pretty, and the only reason gold is so popular is because it's a precious metal and it doesn't rust and we think it's pretty. That's the value that's conferred upon it. But frankincense and myrrh, my goodness, those are wonderful anti-inflammatory antimicrobial herbs. They're wonderful for your health. Frankincense, my goodness, frankincense boswellia, which is the Latin name for frankincense, you can help colon cancer with that. It helps to decrease, prevent, and treat colon cancer cells and reduce it. It helps with healthy gene expression. Similarly to, you know, it helps to press down NF-kappa beta. So it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And myrrh is a resin. It's a resin from a plant, Camphora myrrha. Or Camphora mucho? Anyway, it's Camphora is the genus name. And it is a wonderful resin. And plants with resins in them, resins surround and stick to microbes. And they're the antimicrobial system for the plant. And another way that resin is obtained is from bees. Bees make something called propolis. And propolis is a wonderful resin that's antimicrobial. So myrrh is one of the ingredients in this mouthwash. There's also vitamin C, which is good for strengthening the collagen in your gums. And there's aloe, which heals everything. Alan has allantoin in it, which helps with healthy cellular expression. Golden seal, which will kill anything. So golden seal is an astringent, and it also is a wonderful antimicrobial. So if you got Streptococcus mutans in your mouth, which is the classic bacteria that causes decay, it'll kill it. And witch hazel, another wonderful astringent and antimicrobial. It tastes pretty strong. This is not going to taste like, you know, pretty tasting mouthwash from the drugstore. It's pretty intensely minty and medicinal tasting. So I'd been rinsing with that using a small capful. To this, I'd been adding a dropper of a remineralizing formula containing minerals, Himalayan salt, and more mint and clove oils. The dentist and hygienist thought it was more likely to be the tea tree oil containing mouth rinse than the mineral complex, which might be helping to remineralize my enamel. I'm not sure I 100% agree with that, because the minerals, still the minerals are going to help with the ground substance of the collagen in my gums. And there were some nice salt and some antimicrobial oils in the mineral rinse. So I think it was a combination of the two. I was very excited about this. It's complex, which the dentist and hygienist thought it was more likely to be the the mouth rinse. So I was excited. Such a simple thing to add a tea tree oil mouth rinse to your routine. And you can even use whatever mouth rinse you're already using and add about 10 drops of tea tree oil. So here's what's so great about tea tree oil. So if you're going to add tea tree oil to what your existing mouth rinse, what I would do is I'd start with 10 drops in a whole bottle and then pour it out and rinse it and taste it. Do a little rinse and taste it and see how strong it tastes. You want it to taste strong. You want it to kind of taste like tea tree oil. So if it doesn't, if it's not real strong, then I would add another 10 drops and see how it is. And wait till it's, you want it to be strong enough that it's going to go after and be antimicrobial and do all the things it's going to do for you, but not so strong that you can't stand the way it tastes, because if you're not going to use it, it doesn't work. So you want to titrate it. You know, you do it drop by drop and taste it, and then, you know, but make sure it tastes strong, that there is definitely a taste of tea tree oil in it. So what you're going to do is you're going to take it and you're going to rinse and you're going to swish it in your mouth for at least a minute or two, 2 minutes if you can manage it. And don't put too much in your mouth. You put too much, you don't need too much. You just need enough to cover your teeth. If you put too much in, what naturally happens while you're doing a mouth rinse is you salivate, and saliva adds to the volume of liquid that is in your mouth. And what I like you to do when you're done rinsing is gargle, because then you're going to do an antimicrobial gargle for the back of your throat. A great thing to do in the time of COVID, and even just in general, you're going to be less likely to get colds and flus if you gargle, you know, gargling can help to prevent any kind of microbial illness. So, and if you're somebody that gets tonsillolits, those little tonsil stones in the back of your throat that are just calcification of bacteria that grows in your tonsils, it'll help prevent that too. So don't use too much. You know, I want to say a capful. It's like half a shot or less. Just enough to make sure your teeth get covered, and then enough to gargle and then spit out. All right. So tea tree oil is, it's a really great thing to use. And I just had a really good result at the dentist because I was using this new tea tree oil mouthwash. So very excited about that. All right. So let's do some bullet points to help you with your oral health. Okay. You should brush your teeth. This should not be a surprise to you. And if you brush your teeth, especially at the end of the day, that way you get to sleep with a clean mouth and you've gotten rid of as much plaque as possible so that much less can grow in your mouth overnight. The issue with, so overnight you have a situation where you're not drinking, you're not salivating, you're at rest. And you're not, you know, moving your mouth around. And mostly you're not salivating as much as you salivate during the day. And saliva has antimicrobial substances in it, and it moistens your mouth. And it prevents, to some extent, it will prevent excess bacteria from growing. And so while you're sleeping, if you have bacteria that's already there because you didn't brush your teeth, they're going to be more likely to grow. They're going to have more of a field day. And that one simple thing you can do to prevent decay is make sure you brush your teeth at night, that you do a good brush, that you do all the different things that we're going to talk about, that you do a full-on, spend a good 10 minutes taking care of your teeth at night, and you're going to be less likely to get decay. It's totally worth it. Let me see. So let's talk about pros and cons of manual versus electric toothbrushes. A lot of people feel like it's better to use one or the other. So if you brush your teeth, it's the foundation of good oral health. The American Dental Association is in favor of both. And the thing is, my thought is, if you don't like using an electric toothbrush, please use a manual one, because it's kind of like exercise. What's the best exercise for you?
The one you'll do.
What he said, right? So what's the best toothbrush for you?
The one you'll use.
Yes, I know. And I'm not a huge fan of the electric toothbrush, and maybe I should get over myself. But because Ron certainly has, and
I
should get over myself. He has a beautiful ultrasonic toothbrush, which is all the rage right now, and that's a great thing. So electric and manual toothbrushes both have benefits, and The ADA seal of approval goes on both electric and manual toothbrushes. They're both proven safe and effective, and so you have to decide which one is right for you. So electric ones have bristles, they vibrate or rotate, and they help you remove plaque buildup from your teeth and gums. The vibration allows for more micro movements every time you move your toothbrush across your teeth. And it has been shown that there have been studies that show that they do remove more plaque and reduce gingivitis than manual toothbrushes. After 3 months of use, plaque was reduced by 21% and gingivitis by 11%. They really,
wow, that's a lot.
That's a big difference, yeah.
Yeah.
Ones that oscillate, that vibrate, that rotate, seem to work better than just ones that vibrate.
One thing I can add to this is the reason I went to an electric toothbrush is because my dentist told me I was too aggressive with my brush.
Ah.
And I was causing deterioration around the gums because of it.
Right.
So I went to electric because he said it would be kinder to my gums.
Right. And yet there's an excellent point that I hadn't thought about, which is the micro movements. You can't make micro movements if you're using a toothbrush. You can do that. The rotating head of an electric toothbrush makes these tiny little movements that you simply can't duplicate if
right.
you're using
a
manual toothbrush. And they do most of the work for you. They're also good for people who have arthritis and carpal tunnel syndrome and other developmental disabilities, because all you have to do is hold it. You know, instead of brushing, you just hold it. You can get toothbrushes that have a timer because you want that 2-minute clean. Yeah, so you want to make sure that, so if they have a timer on them, then you'll be forced to, well, you won't be forced. I mean, you could take it out of your mouth, but it'll go off after 2 minutes, and 2 minutes seems to be an ideal amount of time to spend brushing your teeth. Yours has a timer too?
Yeah, but I can add to mine. Mine also has 30-second timed intervals. So it shuts off and turns right back on again every 30 seconds, which reminds me to move to a different part of my mouth when I'm brushing. That's the theory behind it anyway.
That's interesting.
So it is. So you kind of separate your mouth into four parts, and that's how you brush.
So the other thing is when it could be a little somewhat less wasteful, because when you're replacing stuff for an electric toothbrush, you're just replacing the head. You're not replacing the unit. And the unit's going to last a lot longer than the whole toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
And it can help your focus. Like you said, that it has that neat feature where every 30 seconds it turns off to remind you to move to a different part of your mouth. So that can
right.
help you to focus on the right way to do it. And they're really good if you have appliances. If you have braces, that's the way to go, because it's very hard to get in there with a manual toothbrush. And really hard to get in there with floss. I mean, if you want to floss, either you have to use a needle, you know, a floss needle to help you get between your teeth, or you have to use a water pick. You have to use a water flossing device. So people with appliances who already had good health, plaque levels were about the same. But if you're having difficulty, if you have braces, it might be better to use electric. Kids might think they're fun. That would be another reason to do it.
Sure.
And like Ron said, it can be safer for your gums. The con of electric toothbrushes is their expense. You have to... And not only are the toothbrushes themselves expensive, you have to spend a lot of money on the replacement head. So that can be a cost. And then you have to replace batteries as well. And the other thing is finding the right replacement heads. Sometimes, you know, of course, a toothbrush is going to want you to use their branded replacement heads, but you can also sometimes find cheaper replacement heads that are compatible with your toothbrush. So you have to figure that out. And, you know, if you're somewhere and you forget your toothbrush, you can run into a convenience store, a drugstore, and grab a manual toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are going to wind up, in some cases, using both, in depending on the situation. And there were some studies that show that they don't really remove more plaque. And so they might be, I think it just depends on how you brush.
Mm.
And so if they're, and then if you have a plug-in version, there's an issue if you travel internationally. So, you know, if it's that much trouble, if you're traveling internationally, that's a time of, you know, depending how long you're going to be away. Either you get one when you get there. If you're going to be there for 2 months, you can get one when you get there. Or if you're not, you can get a converter. Another expense, but you can get a converter so you can use your appliances in the international setting. Or you can simply get a manual toothbrush.
Right.
Not everybody likes the vibration feeling, and it also makes you
drool. Takes a little getting used to.
And it makes you drooly.
That's why you brush your teeth over a sink.
Yeah, you have to brush your teeth over a sink.
Or out in the yard. Sometimes I do it outside.
And then you can go, you can't go look at the TV like I do. So the benefit of a manual toothbrush, they've been around since time began. Not really, but for a long time. If you're using it, if you're brushing your teeth twice a day, you could still do it and you're still going to get a very good result, especially if you do the other things that we're going to talk about. And the thing about manual toothbrushes, just what I said, if you forget your toothbrush, you can, it's inexpensive. You can go into a gas station and they have toothbrushes there. You know, you can get one pretty much anywhere. If you're at the hotel will have toothbrushes for you and you know, little inexpensive. They might even give you one. I mean, so the con is that what you said, that people tend to brush too hard and they can, and people will wear away their gums and wind up having to get gum grafts. And it can make it more difficult to know how long you're brushing. You have to be really, you know, cognizant of how long you've been brushing. And for toddlers and little kids, you want them to use, guess which brush is best for little kids?
The one they'll use.
You got it. Boom. Right. So.
Yeah, I'm hitting yes, hard
yes,
here.
You are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So they can use an electric toothbrush, but it might not be practical depending on how old the child is and how adept the child is. So you might want to give them a manual one. Replacing your toothbrush, you should really replace them every 3 to 4 months, according to the American Dental Association. Also, if it's frayed or if you used it while you were sick, because it could be continuing to carry viruses or bacteria on it from your illness. So if you've, if you have a cold, when you're done with your cold, toss the toothbrush. You deserve another one. You had to deal with being sick, so now you can toss your toothbrush. All right. So you want to use proper technique, and you want to do it twice a day every day. You want to pick one that's the right size for your mouth. I have problems with that sometimes. If I get a toothbrush that's too big, I'll gag on it. You want to hold it at a 45-degree angle. You want to brush all the surfaces, front and back, and chewing. And rinse your toothbrush. Store it upright to dry, not upside down. Keep it away from the toilet. All right?
That's funny.
It's not as much of an issue if... The thing is, the toilet is an issue if it gets flushed with the lid open. Right? Because guess what? If you flush a toilet and the lid is open, there is spray. And yes, there can be urine and fecal matter in the spray. And you don't realize that spray is happening, but think about what's going on in there. So if you are clear that every single time that toilet gets flushed, the lid is closed, then it's not a big deal. But if you're not, you want to keep that toothbrush away from the toilet. Because if you have multiple people using the bathroom, and some of them are people who you don't know what their habits are, it's a good idea to keep it away from the toilet.
Okay.
Because spray happens. And then store it upright. If you store it upside down, it's just going to be harder for it to dry. If it's sitting on a surface or it's in a cup, it can't dry as easily. And if it doesn't dry as easily, it can get moldy. Then you should floss. It's a good idea to floss. And mouth rinses are optional, shouldn't replace flossing or brushing. But as I told you, I think they're a really good thing. And if you have bleeding gums, it can just be that you haven't been good about your oral hygiene, but you can have more serious gum disease. You could have a vitamin deficiency, especially vitamin C. And your gums will tend to be more friable during pregnancy. because when you're pregnant, you have estrogen, and estrogen causes your gum tissue to grow more. And so women are more likely to get gingivitis and bleeding when they're pregnant, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You can eat more vitamin C-containing foods at that point, or even take some extra vitamin C. And you could also take coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10, if you're deficient in coenzyme Q10, that can cause gingivitis as well. So what's the best toothbrush for you?
The one you'll use.
Right. Okay. So there are advantages to both an electric and a manual toothbrush. I'm not sure if I would be good. I find the idea of using electric toothbrush personally to be a little stressful, because I'd have to make sure that I was using it right, that it was charged, and that I had the brush heads, and it's just an extra layer of something to worry about. And I find it very easy to keep regular toothbrushes around. And, you know, I probably could get used to it and it would be all right. But anyway, you should use the one that you'll use. And it probably doesn't make as much of a difference between, depending on your brushing technique, if you do the other things that we're going to talk about. All right. So the next thing you want to do is floss. Floss your teeth. It contributes to good dental hygiene because it lifts plaque and food in between your teeth. It removes plaque and food debris that, and the bristles of a toothbrush can't reach deep in between the teeth to remove it all. There is a suggestion that you should floss before you brush, because if you floss after, then you don't have the effect of the brushing carrying away the stuff that you dug out. And so some people suggest that you floss before you brush, and that kind of makes sense. When you floss and get the gunk out from between your teeth, it's going to be brushed away by the toothbrush. And then there's a recent study that showed that massaging the gums with a rubber tip, which is found at the other end of some toothbrushes. So the rubber tip, and you can get, it, rubber tip can be at the end of toothbrushes, or it can be a separate instrument that just has a rubber tip. And then I use the one with the separate instrument. It's usually more effective in reducing germ count than a regimen of antibiotics. How amazing is that? So it's such a simple thing. You don't have to take an antibiotic. All you have to do is pick your teeth with this rubber tip. So what is it actually doing? So rubber tip, it's very simple. Bacteria that cause gum disease, they're anaerobic. They have to live in the dark. Oral bacteria are... So because they're anaerobic, they need to live in an environment that doesn't have oxygen, that doesn't have air. So they thrive in those dark spaces between the gum and the roots of your teeth, the pockets. So when you brush and floss, in part, it's because it's not just because you're brushing away plaque. It's because you're opening up the spaces between your teeth and your gums, and you're introducing oxygen to the area. So the bacteria die. So if you massage your gums, that space between your teeth and your gum, with that rubber tip, you're going to open up that space and you're going to introduce oxygen there, and the bacteria just can't survive. When you compare the percentage of bacteria between those who massage their gums with the rubber tip and those who take antibiotics, the rubber tipping group had slightly more reduction in bacterial count. How cool is that? So it's really worth it to use a rubber tip. Such a simple thing. Do you realize that rubber tip can make it so that you have less plaque, you have less bad breath, you have less decay, you have less cardiovascular disease. So you can't lose. The only thing you lose is time, because it takes time to do all this stuff. It really does. But I think for that, you could get away with doing that once a day. It's a good idea to brush your teeth twice a day. But in terms of doing the whole deal, the floss, and I was at a lecture that was led by a naturopathic physician, Dr. Tom, who was also a dentist. He said that if you disrupt the plaque once a day, that's good enough. And if you're going to do a full-on brush where you're disrupting plaque and you're flossing and using a rubber tip, I would do it before bed. That would be the time to do it, because you're going into your sleep time with a very clean mouth. I would say that it's probably a good idea to at least brush and do the oral rinse twice a day, because the oral rinse is going to be very helpful if you're, especially if you're pressed for time. And if you want to floss twice a day, you can. I don't think it will hurt anything. So in the studies, both groups that brush and floss during the experiment. In the study where they saw that there was less bacteria, the people who brushed and flossed as well as used a rubber tip had less bacterial count than the people who just took antibiotics instead of using a rubber tip. So that's pretty amazing. And you shouldn't only massage your gums. You should still brush and floss too. And you should massage your gums after you've brushed and flossed so that you've gotten rid of the bulk of the plaque and bacteria. If you have moderate to severe gum disease, so if your gum disease is really bad, like you have to talk to your dentist about whether you should use a pick. So it's a good idea. All right. So now let's talk about whether or not you should use mouthwash. Well, I'm a fan, especially of the mouthwash that I use. So there are pros and cons. Of course, when you use mouthwash, it makes your breath very minty fresh. So, of course, fluoride is controversial. There's the idea that fluoride can help to remineralize your teeth. I like using mouth rinses that don't just have fluoride, that definitely have calcium phosphate in it, because that's really been shown to alter the pH so your teeth can take up calcium more readily. And I like this mouth rinse that I'm using that has a multitude of minerals in it that can help to remineralize your teeth. If you use a rinse that has those things, it can help with remineralization. Can also help with gum disease. And I know, as we said, that the tea tree oil one I was using definitely helped my gums to be in better shape. They might have, antibacterial mouth rinse might have chlorhexidine, which I'm not crazy about, triclosan, which I'm really not crazy about, and thymol, which is just fine. Thymol is just extract of thyme. It's an essential oil. But the other three, you can become antibiotic resistant. The other two, the triclosan, the chlorhexidine, you can become antibiotic resistant to. So not a good idea. In your pregnancy, you can be less likely, because you're more likely to have gingivitis when you're pregnant, it's a good idea to keep your teeth ultra clean, and using a mouth rinse can be part of that. The bacteria from periodontitis can make you more inflamed while you're pregnant, and that's more of a concern. And if you have more inflammation, you could be more likely to get to have preterm labor. There are mouth rinses that have peroxide in them that can help reduce the stains on your teeth, so you can get whiter teeth from them. And you can also get rinses that have some potassium nitrate in them, which will reduce sensitivity. They also might include arginine. Arginine also, it's an amino acid that can also reduce sensitivity. That helps to seal the tubules in sensitive sites, as does potassium nitrate. That does the same thing. The other thing is that mouth rinses can soothe ulcers, especially if it has things like aloe or licorice, or even something antimicrobial and astringent might help. So if you have ulcerations, you get canker sores and stuff, that it can help with that. There are some disadvantages. They've been linked to oral cancer. So the suggestion there is simply don't use a mouth rinse that has alcohol in it. You avoid alcohol in your mouth rinses, and that the component that is thought to cause oral cancer is the alcohol. It's probably not as big a deal as if you drink alcohol all the time, but there's some concern about it. There's a thought that mouth rinses can increase the sensitivity of teeth, and guess what? It's the alcohol. So use a mouth rinse that doesn't have alcohol in it, and it can irritate canker. See, all of these concerns have to do with the alcohol that's in it. If you are using a mouth rinse in lieu of good oral hygiene, it can mask your bad breath, and bad breath can be a sign that you have decay. So you shouldn't use a mouth rinse instead of brushing and flossing. And if you rinse your mouth right after you brush your teeth, if your toothpaste has, like I have toothpaste I can get that has nanoparticles of calcium in it, or if you believe in using fluoride, the mouth rinse can rinse the fluoride out. So the solution there is to use a mouth rinse that has beneficial minerals in it, and then you don't have to worry about it. So it definitely can help your oral health. It depends what's in it, what it's going to do for you. All right. So the tea tree oil mouthwash that I use definitely improved my oral health. And I use a mouth rinse that does not have alcohol in it. Just make sure there's no alcohol in it. Now, you can use a calcium phosphate paste. It's a paste that you apply and leave on after you're done with all of your cleaning. Again, apply it after your oral hygiene routine at night, so it goes on your teeth, it goes on your teeth, and you'll have better mineral deposition and with mineral disruption from food and drink and salivation and all that stuff. So if you want to, there's certain foods you can eat for oral health, believe it or not, foods that will actually help you to have oral health. Let's see. So would you believe that cacao nibs are good for your oral health? And you eat cacao nibs that have been unsweetened, they're raw and organic, the polyphenols actually, so if you throw some cacao nibs in your salad or in your fruit salad, or you just chew on them because you like them, they actually can help to kill oral bacteria. And they can destroy and directly destroy strep mutans, which is really cool. So plain cacao nibs are something you can just put in your desk and you can chomp on them, something you can chew later in the day. You'll get these wonderful antioxidants and they'll help your oral health. You just make sure they have no sugar in them, because sugar is one of the things on the no list. Grass-fed dairy is supposed to help your oral health because of vitamin K2. There's more vitamin K2 and also, by the way, conjugated linoleic acid in grass-fed dairy from grass-fed cows. Because the production of vitamin K2 is activated by chlorophyll. So when you eat a lot of grass, you get more vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 has been linked to healthier teeth, as is the phosphorus content. Fatty fish, so like you're talking your salmon and your swordfish, and just because it has vitamin D, and vitamin D reduce the risk of tooth decay, along with vitamins A and K2, helps to deliver calcium to the teeth. So it helps to, so even though the teeth you have are basically what you have, you can, that the your enamel is somewhat dynamic. You can remineralize your teeth. And if you have adequate vitamin D, it will help to direct calcium into your teeth and other minerals. Leafy greens just have a lot of minerals in them, and they also support a healthy oral microbiome. They're really good for your teeth. They're going to have good, if they're organic, they're going to have good microflora in them. And also, if you're just because you're chewing on them, you're going to get that they're going to impart some of the good microflora into your mouth. And they have, because they have prebiotics in them, they have starches in them that will help oral bacteria to thrive, beneficial oral bacteria, the probiotic ones. And then grapefruits and oranges and citrus fruits. The acid can have a negative effect on your teeth, but the benefit is essentially because of the bioflavonoids and the vitamin C. They just make your gums stronger. And that's why British people are jokingly called limeys, because they discovered that people would get scurvy when they were on the boats because they weren't eating any vitamin C. And then they discovered that if they gave people on boats limes and lemons, that the scurvy would go away. And at some point somebody discovered vitamin C. So crackers are probably the worst food for your oral health.
Really?
Really.
Why?
It's the carbohydrates. They break down in your mouth. Your mouth breaks down the starches. You have amylase in your mouth, which is a starch-reducing enzyme, and turns into sugar, which make it so crackers get stuck in your teeth because they're mushy, and the amylase in your teeth, in your mouth, breaks it down to sugar, and now you have sugar, and that's how. So Dried fruit, the problem with dried fruit is just because it's sticky. It sticks to your teeth, and the sugar sticks and hangs around, which is going to be more, you're going to build more plaque. Soda, whether it's diet or not, because of the phosphoric acid, because of how it changes the pH in your mouth, the calcium, the phosphoric acid in it can leach calcium from your teeth. If you do want to drink soda, drink your soda and then make sure you drink plain water after it. Kombucha, not so good for your teeth, again, because it's very acidic. It has some sugar and it's acidic. It does have, you want a kombucha that's lower in sugar, because of the acid and because of the sugar that's put in it to brew, it can be bad for your teeth. So the answer there is just drink your kombucha and then drink plain water afterwards. Beans and lentils. Same thing. Well, there's a couple things. It's because of the starch that gets lost in your teeth, but also beans and lentils have phytic acid in it, which binds calcium and binds minerals that can benefit your teeth. That's the problem with them. So again, that's another situation where if you're going to eat beans and lentils, make sure you drink water after you're done. Drinking plain water can really do a world of help. You can also drink green tea. Green tea is helpful against periodontal disease. It's been shown to increase gum health and reduce periodontal disease. Then there are probiotics for oral health. There are wonderful probiotics, and you can get probiotic lozenges that are meant specifically meant for oral health, for improving your oral health. They'll reduce your bad breath, and they will outcompete the strep mutans that's in your mouth, and they'll kill them. And so you usually get lozenges, and they usually taste good. They're usually flavored with something, and generally they're not going to have sugar in them. They'll have xylitol or some other beneficial sweetener, and xylitol is something that can kill plaque. So if you have a xylitol sweetened probiotic lozenge, then you suck on the lozenge. It's going to impart beneficial bacteria into your teeth, and off you go. So it's nice. So I thought I'd go back to a nice discussion about your teeth. So the take-homes are brush your teeth, use an electric toothbrush or a manual toothbrush, whichever one you'll use. Floss your teeth. Consider doing it before you brush. Definitely brush your teeth before you go to sleep. Use a mouth rinse that has tea tree oil and aloe and does not have alcohol in it. And consider using a rubber tip. A rubber tip is going to stimulate your gums. Use the rubber tip after you brush and floss, and you check with your dentist if you have a lot of bleeding or you have very sore, swollen gums. And then consider using the calcium phosphate paste at the end to leave as a leave-on, and that's going to help to remineralize your teeth. And then in terms of, we also reviewed what to do if your office is mandating vaccination, and it depends on the situation, whether it's an absolute mandate or not. Like I said, if it's an absolute mandate, you might get let go or you might not get hired if you're not vaccinated. And if it's not absolute, then work with your employee to do what's right and do wear a mask when you're at the office. Masks and the combination of masks and vaccinations are what is going to get us out of this pandemic. Obviously, it's also helpful to do everything you can to be good to your body, to be good to your health, to eat your fruits and vegetables, eat your clean protein, avoid processed food and sugars, get your exercise, get your rest. All those things are going to help too. You're going to do better with if you do get COVID, or to protect yourself from COVID, the healthier you are. So I think that's enough for today, don't you?
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
I guess so. It's been an hour.
You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.